Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. Tonight, I'm wearing a sweater, argyle, I think is the pattern, with a nice pencil skirt afterwards with a cute belt in the middle, mainly just to give me shape because I'm not wearing body and I love to be shaped like a potato. You know, it's interesting. So I did 4 very large events in 4 weeks' time, and I have to tell you, I am exhausted. Because we just started at the beginning part of October, where we brought out Land Insider. Then we brought out Astrid Aurelia. We brought out Kendra Onyx. And then last but not least, we brought out Ada Vox. And it was such a beautiful and wonderful experience getting to hang out with all those people and talking with them and learning about the world outside of Portland. You know, it's true, like, pre-sale tickets just matter so much these days. But even so, I love talking about drag with people from all over the country and all over the world, because we all have different ideas about what drag is and what makes it safe and what makes it fun. And so, you know, I kind of want to do a little bit more of that in some capacity. I really want to have that moment, that vibe, where we get to just, you know a little bit more about what's happening with other people. And that's why I want to keep doing more interviews. Now, when it comes to me, I recently was talking. I had made this Facebook status that I'm going to share with you all. I have a lot of, you know, I've been doing drag for over 11 years, maybe 12. And what I have realized from that is, you know, not everybody's going to love you. Not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to hate you. And so I was wondering why, because in my 20s, like when I was 25 doing drag, I would have people that would make me feel so less than, and I would get in my feels and I'd get really depressed and I would lash out and I'd be awful. But today, because I was just thinking about this today, and I said, the status goes, Coco, why don't you ever fight back when people come for you? And I said, because when I look around, I don't see the people who come for me. We don't share the same stages and we don't share the same rooms. In my life, as much as it sucks when it's happening, there's very little to be gained from playing in the mud with people who need that consistent validation of being a victim to the big bad Coco. I'm not untouchable, but when I look at the lives of the people who try to make me feel less than, I'm not envious of their struggles. I'm not desperate for the things they have. I don't want to be, I don't want to compete with folks who cannot compare, or whatever the phrase. And for the one person who incessantly gatekeeps me from the certain spaces and notoriety, I feel empowered by the fact that I affect them so much they close any door around me when my name is even mentioned. They make me work harder. But even in that scenario, I'm winning because I profit off of them in many ways. Bottom line, I was talking about my life yesterday with a friend. I was speaking on the good things that have happened. Don't get me wrong, I have hardships, but I also have love and opportunity. I've been blessed in many ways, and I work every day to not take that for granted. What didn't kill me made me stronger. I read a meme that said life didn't get easier, you just got better. I honestly don't know how I would be if I wasn't the villain in someone's story. Life shit on me a lot this year, and I've lost a lot of friends, but life is continual change, and I'm so excited to see what's next for the people who support and the folks waiting for me to follow my face in the shadows. And all of that is just to say, I don't love the phrase that says, you know, like baby, like, you cannot compete where you do not compare. And I don't really love that phrase because it's like, it's too boastful. What I mean when I say that is, like, we're just not even in the same lane. It's not saying my lane is better or greater or brighter or, like, just, you know, more advanced. It's just, if we're not in the same lane, or if we're not even in the same shows, or if we're not in the same line of entertainment, I don't have time to consider your opinion about all the things that I do. And I know that most people are like, hey, like, Coco, what I'm talking about is accountability. And, like, but even with that, like, accountability is supposed to be one-on-one, like, and a lot of people try to make it public or force me out into, like, these, like, all eyes on us battles, and that's just not my journey, and it's never really been my journey. So, yeah, with that, like, make sure we're being kind to one another. That's always the bottom line of what the things I want to say is, be kind to one another. Always focus on yourself and the success that you want to have, and, you know, I think that hard work, continual hard work will sometimes lead to success. Yeah, and with that, how are you doing, listeners? Let me know in the comments.
Tune in, fabulous listeners. We've got a sizzling announcement for all you drag aficionados and karaoke connoisseurs. Join us every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. for an unforgettable night of glamour and entertainment at Misfits Bar and Lounge, located at 2530 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. Hosted by the mesmerizing Autumn Rains and captivating Coco Gem Holiday, this drag queen karaoke show will have you singing, dancing, and living your best life. Let loose and showcase your vocal prowess alongside these extraordinary queens as they create an atmosphere bursting with energy, laughter, and pure fabulousness. Mark your calendars and gather your squad for a Wednesday night that promises to be nothing short of spectacular. Whether you're a seasoned performer or a first-time diva, Misfits Bar and Lounge is a place to be for an unforgettable evening of entertainment, empowerment, and endless fun. Don't miss out on the fabulous extravaganza. Join us this Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and let your inner star shine at Misfits Bar and Lounge, Portland's newest queer plus space.
And we are back, listeners, and it is with my great pleasure to introduce
to It's a Podcast. Tune into What They Tell You Podcast.
Gosh, I miss you. How have you been?
I miss you too. I've been well, you know. I miss you too. I recently moved. I was up in Cleveland for a bit, and then I moved down to Youngstown to be closer to my boyfriend. And since then things have been going really swimmingly. Like I did move into a smaller apartment, but you know, it's starting to feel more like home than my last one, and got a new job as a tailor. And I'm really beginning to settle down here, and I kind of like it.
Okay. So I didn't know that you had a boyfriend. How long have you been with your partner?
We've been together for about a year and a half.
Oh,
yeah.
You moved in like lesbians.
But we didn't do a U-Haul. I'm too dainty for that. I hired people to do the U-Hauling for me.
Using some of that Camp Wanakiki money to get people to move for you.
Camp Wanakiki money? Where?
Where's the money?
Where? You're getting paid for that?
God, I wish. So the first question I ask everybody is, where did your drag name come from and how long you've been performing?
So my drag name came from Google Translate. I love telling this story because it does actually tie into Camp Wanakiki. So I came up with my drag name because I wanted to do like a foreign name, but I didn't want to do anything that was like not connected to my heritage or anything like that. So I was like, I don't want to do like an Irish name. I don't know any like Polish names. So like, let's do German. What are some German names I can do? And Carl is like German slang for dude or bro. So it's like Carly. And if you look in like baby name books, it'll say like Carly is a German name that means man. I was like, oh, that's perfect. And so for my last name, I was like, oh, man in a dress. So I go onto Google Translate, like the little gremlin I am, and I put in a dress, and I get in einem Kleid. But I didn't want to spell it like that. So I spell it with a little U with the umlaut so that then when I sign autographs, I can put a little smiley face in there. The thing is the sugar bakers were a little taken aback by this because I auditioned for them at the Austin International Drag Festival in 2018, and they both told me as soon as I entered the room, they were like, we're really happy that you explained your drag name to us in your audition video, because I don't know if you know this, but both of us are fluent in German. And your German's not good. They laid me the fuck out. I was like, oh shit, I'm not getting cast on this show, am I?
Oh, I love it. Oh, God, I love it.
And now they like to make fun of me for it sometimes. Like they'll come up to me and just like start randomly like speaking full German sentences. I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
Oh God, I hate those twins. No, I'm fine with them. I would not. I don't hate the Sugar Bakers in any capacity. I of think they're not. Really we wonderful people. Here. They're just really dumb. No, and so let's. I mean, you know, people want to know about it, so let's talk about our time on Camp Wanakiki before we talk about what our lives have been like after. So, yeah. Were you excited when you got your call?
Oh, I was screaming. I got a phone call that like had no caller ID. All it said was Chicago, and I was like, I only know of two people in Chicago that would have any reason to call me right now, and I knew that was the Sugar Bakers calling me to let me know that like either I got cast or I didn't get on. So I like my stomach just sank. I was like, okay, this is the call. Let's listen. They let me know that I was cast. They asked if I wanted to be on the show. I said, absolutely, I'm there. They're like, okay, cool. We'll send a list of like all the things that you need to prepare for the show, and we'll see you in a month. And I was like, fuck yeah. And then as soon as I hung up the phone, I'm just screaming at the top of my lungs. I was so fucking pumped to get cast on that show. It was so validating. It felt great.
It did. I felt the same way. I think that there, I remember my call was very similar. I had actually forgotten about it a little bit because between Austin and our phone calls, it was actually a lot of time.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that.
Yeah. I remember when we got the call for casting, I think it was like a month and a half out. I remember we only had like a month to gather all of the costumes that we needed to prepare, which like, as I understand it, is like pretty standard for like drag television series is like Drag Race. I think the girls only get a month or so. Dragula, I don't know how long they get, but I can't imagine it's too different.
No, it's very true. It's very quick, and it's to make it more fair. You know, everybody has the same amount of time. And whatever. And, you know, I think, so I never asked you this, like, who, did you do all of your, looks yourself? Did you craft all of those yourself or did you have help?
I had a lot of help. I would have never been able to get all of that done within a month. I have a lot of people to thank for helping me get there. Peach Fuzz, Samantha Echo, Bella Sin, just to name a few people that were so helpful in helping me get my looks ready. Mm-hmm. Peach Fuzz, like shout out to Peach Fuzz real quick. Peach Fuzz makes some of the most stunning wigs that you'll ever see. Bellison, just a phenomenal burlesque performer. Same with Samantha Echo, phenomenal burlesque performer and drag queen. And yeah, like if it was not for their help, I would have never been able to prepare for the show.
Wow.
I was so heartbroken because like I was eliminated before any of the things that they helped with were able to make it to the stage. I was so heartbroken about that.
Yeah, I also had a lot of help. I had two friends at the time who were just amazing seamstresses, who I just happened to be friends with. And we were like, cause you know, you go through phases of life when you're hanging out with certain people. Oh, yeah. So when I got cast on the show, I was hanging out with two people who sew really, really, really well. Mm-hmm. And so they helped me with all of my packages. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit of a godsend. Like I know in Portland right now, who I would ask if I ever got cast because, you know, they would want the notoriety from their costume skills and whatever. And actually the funny thing is Claire apparently actually worked with one of the costumers that I would work with if I got cast on another show or something like that.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I'm good friends with them. And so I have a question for you because everybody always asks this question. If they do a Camp Wanakiki All-Stars, would you be on it?
I'd like to have another shot at it. I think that my drag has evolved quite a bit.
I
I had like another shout out. Ha!
God, oh wow!
Like, yeah, I think my drag has evolved quite a bit since my time on Camp Wanakiki. I would love to have another shot at it to like just give the new Carly a chance to like dip their toes, you know. But also, like, as fun as it was. It was a very exhausting experience, so I have to just prepare myself.
Well, I've been seeing all your thoughty pictures you've been doing. I see you at the gym doing all your shit, so yeah, you could probably do it.
I could probably do it. Oh my god, that was another thing. Like,
I don't know if
at I camp, I was like, oh my gosh, we're walking up and down this hill. Like, I was looking in the mirror. I was like, my legs look good. Like, we were at camp because we had to keep hiking up and down that hill from our cabin. Oh my god.
Oh yeah, I'm thinking about it a lot too recently, and so because I get asked the question, I think we all get asked the question, because you know, even the Boulets had done an all-star season by now, and Drag Race had already done an all-star season by now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have asked me, because now I'm 37 years old, and like, the funny thing is, I know that Kitty was on the show when she was very, very much older and could do all this stuff. But like, being in drag in the wilderness just sounds so awful at 37 years old. It makes me feel so tired, and it makes me feel so cranky. I would be pounding coffee. Like, I would be pounding coffee all day long. Yeah, y'all have to remember, those filming days were like 18 hours.
They really were. Like, from the butt crack of dawn, like 5 a.m., Tora Hyman would be every day at 5 a.m. at her mirror getting ready. And I'm like, dedication, girl. My goodness.
Dedication. I don't have anywhere near – I still love drag fiercely. I do love drag. And the thing is, I love
my job.
But I love my job. It's great. I love drag. But it's that experience feels – I feel like this is what I wouldn't say, because I know the Sugar Bakers are going to listen to this. This is what I would say to the Sugar Bakers. If the Sugar Bakers want to do an all-star season, just in the same way that Drag Race and I think even Dragula does it, they would need to pay for – they would have to like give us a little bit more money to be able to produce those costumes and like those things for people would want to see an all-star season, or maybe even pay for our flights, right? You know, like pay a lot more so we could give the fans something more.
I think that's ultimately going to be the kicker for whether or not an all-stars does happen, because when people think of All-Stars, like they're going to want to see the growth that's happened since our season. And that's not necessarily going to come just straight out of pocket. Like Drag Race contestants, they get paid per episode. And I understand that, like with Camp Wanakiki, the budget is a completely different origination from what a Drag Race is getting their money from. But now that they are affiliated with Out TV, I feel like that could leverage them to get a bigger budget to make an all-star season.
They are getting, because they are on Out TV now. You know, they are going strong. Their viewer count is pretty good. I think that they could potentially. And of course, they're the franchise owners of Hamburger Mary's as well. You know, so
Fries could be our own franchise of Hamburger Mary's. Yeah. My God. Hamburger Mary's Youngstown.
Oh my God. Hamburger Mary's Portland for the third time in a row.
Third time in a row? What? You've had Hamburger Mary's three times?
No, it's been two times. It's closed both times. And I actually met... So I didn't know that the Sugar Bakers weren't a franchise owner here. I thought that they were the owners of the one in Portland. It turns out that they weren't. I met a person who knew the person literally just last week, actually. They came to a show and they're like, oh, I wanted to let you know who I was. Like, I knew about the Hamburger Mary's that was here, because I was like, oh, crazy. I was like, it just you know, Portland, it's really hard to have a franchise here because Portland is just known for having really, really great food. Not saying Hamburger Mary's doesn't, but it's the food quality here is just insane. Like, you have to be damn good food to have a restaurant that survives here.
That's what I'm so excited about with next month, you bringing me out to Portland. I'm so fucking excited to, like,
it's just good.
I've heard so many great things about the food in Portland, and I want to eat it up. I want to eat it up.
It's so good. It's so good. We have to go to some food trucks because Portland's really known for its food trucks, for its restaurants too. I probably should have brought you all out for like Saturday, Sunday, and Monday is what I think I should have done. But we'll go. We'll definitely get some food. We'll hang out. It'll be amazing. Yeah. So, obviously, announcement for all the listeners is I am bringing out Carly and Item Clyde to Portland on December 3rd, I think is what the date is.
Yay!
It's a long time 3rd. Coming.
me and some other guests. I don't know if we want to give away who all is in the cast yet or not.
Oh, yeah, we can definitely give away who's okay. going to be in the cast.
Me and fellow Ohio drag artist Riley Poppyseed are going to be coming out to Portland. Riley Poppyseed made it all the way to the top three of Camp Wanakiki Season 5.
Mm-hmm. I'm super excited because I've never met Riley. They seem like they'd be super chill. They have a great online following and persona and personality. So I'm really excited to be able to work with them in some capacity. I just think it'll be such a cool show.
I love Riley Poppyseed. Like, every show that I'm in with him is just absolutely stellar. I was recently in a show with him called Trash, and we were all encouraged to, like, bring out our, like, nastiest, filthiest, like, raunchiest, goriest numbers ever. And he closed out the show with a number fully dedicated to pooping. It was incredible. It was absolutely bonkers. I'm like, he's on stage, doing this absolutely crazy mix, and you've seen me perform my mixes. You know how fucking stupid they are. I was in the back of the room, just running in circles, losing my goddamn mind with how funny his fucking mix was, and how he commanded the room and the stage. It was incredible. Oh my goodness.
There is a queen here. She's from Chicago, I think. Maybe her name was Linda Jo. Her name is Linda Jo. She has a mix that I've borrowed it from her. It's the dumbest thing ever. And the funny thing about how dumb this mix is it stays true to form. It's one of those mixes where the song's always about to start, mm-hmm. and it never does. And those are always so funny. And then it does, and then it just plays a small clip from the middle, literally maybe like 3 seconds of the song. And then it goes back to just playing the intro part of the song over and over and over again. And then
I think I've seen that one on Instagram. I Have Nothing by Whitney Houston. It's just the intro over and over and over again.
Oh no, I've seen that. Okay, so I've seen that number too. This is not that one, but I've seen that. That's really good too. And that's so funny. And I live because she wears the most beautiful gown and hair and everything, and she's always looking like she's about to start and then stops, and then she just left the stage, and I was floored. I was floored because it almost feels like it's a waste of a performance. Because, like, you're not, like, giving the crowd anything because you haven't started. So, like, people aren't really tipping because they're waiting for the song to start. And then she just leaves. It was so great. Unhinged.
Honestly, I am fascinated by that aspect of drag performances. Like, people will go on stage and often pull something out of their pocket that is – something that we're often told not to do, like, for example, giving us nothing, but like, if yes. it's delivered in a way that just is so entertaining, people live for it, people love it. Like, go on stage, do the beginning of the song over and over again, and just leave. I'm gonna laugh my ass off. That's hilarious.
It's as so opposed funny. To and here's
like a straight song and just stood there like this. I'm probably not gonna laugh.
Well, here's the thing though. I live, and actually I agree with you. I want, if somebody, because there is, for the listeners out there, there is this style of drag called giving us nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's so like where somebody's just not giving you what you want from the number because you're expecting something, but they're doing something else that's like kind of deadpan. And like, it's so good. And I always tell people, I was like, I will tip the house down boots for somebody who gives me nothing. I want so much of nothing in the most artistic, comedic way to where I just, I remember I tipped a girl down so hard for like a powerful part of a song where she just drank an entire pitcher of water. And I was like, give us nothing. Don't emote any of this. Give us nothing. And I just, oh my God, it was so funny. And like, she just kept putting her finger up and then just kept putting her finger up. Like she's about to start like emoting the song and then just finished it, tapped her mouth and put the water pitcher down and left the stage. I was like, take all of my money. You deserve all of my money.
That's so funny. Oh my God. My one friend from the Cleveland area, Dr. Lady J, actual doctor, has a doctorate in drag history.
Yeah, I love
that. We love to see it. She tells me so much about like the Cleveland drag scene from before I was ever involved in it. And she told me, I can't remember who it was, but she told me about a queen that would go on stage at our club called Bounce and had this number where she would just not lip sync at all. She would just go on stage, no shoes, sit down on the stage and just eat a whole pecan pie.
And oh. Yes.
And people would come up and tip her and she'd be like, no, like pulling away her pie. Oh my God. I can't remember who it was she said or what song that she did it to, but like honestly, like you could do that to Baby Shark and I would tip you the fuck down. Like Baby Shark, Baby Shark.
I had a moment where I did this new number. Is this, I can't even remember the name of the song, it's just talking about like dating some trashy boy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And but what I wanted to do for the number is just like where it was kind of like a feeling myself kind of song where I just wanted to like be ritzy and like I'm just doing things to pamper myself. Like it was a pamper myself song. And so I went out there with my coach purse and I put it on a stool and I'm starting to lip sync the song and whatever. And like I have this nice lotion, I was putting it on myself and I'm just being all serious, lip syncing the song. And this person screams from the audience, goes, "Moisturize, baby!" And I fucking lost it. I laughed so hard. The whole performance was shit after that. I was laughing so hard because he's like, yes, moisturize. I was like, wow.
I love those performances. those are fucking fantastic.
So let's get into a little bit more about what happened to Carly after the show. So I know you're still performing in drag before you're coming out here to Portland. What do you think, what is the biggest difference between Carly then when you were on the show to Carly now?
I think that I take things a little less seriously. Like I remember back when we were filming the show, I was very anxious and very in my head about, making sure that I do a good job, that it just really blocked out any like just carefree spirit that would have like aided campiness, you know. I think that nowadays I have much more fun with drag. Like I had fun with it then, but I guess I was kind of scared to like be in any way mask presenting. Like I was always getting shit for like not wearing boobs on stage. And like, I think that being on the season, meeting, and even before the season, like meeting queens and kings and non-binary drag performers in Austin that like had hit my microphone. All of these different drag performers that had so many different iterations of like how to perform drag, like it really opened my eyes to like just how endless the possibilities are. And I think the biggest difference is like the fact that now I can tap into those like creativity spaces. Like I can think of ideas that are further beyond what I was able to think of back then, because I let myself have fun with it.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful. This is going to sound weird. For me, it was about actually finally leaning into doing more traditional kind of drag. I've always kind of done drag my way, how mm-hmm. I wanted it to be done. And I actually, after being on the show, it made me actually want to merge into more traditional styles of drag, like bigger hair, you know, sequined gowns and costumes, and, you know, commissioning more things. And because I want to be able, because the thing is, like, if you're one of those people, which is kind of what you're getting at, who says, I know how to do it, but this is what I'm going to do. Like, because there's some people who will lie and be like, oh, yeah, I know how to do all those aspects of drag, but this is what I look like. And it's like, no, I don't know if that's true. It's like, right. So for me, I wanted to learn all of those styles. I wanted to learn how to present myself in a bunch of different ways. And then I get to just choose and pick from my wheelhouse about what makes me feel confident and what makes me feel safe and loved and celebrated in my drag. Because I will say, even if you do love what you're doing in drag, the audience still might not respond to it well. I want to debunk that myth all day long. When people are like, if you love what you're doing on stage, honey, the audience will love it too. That is not always the case.
That is a beautiful lie that we tell ourselves often.
It's a beautiful lie. It's a beautiful lie. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying too. And I think that that's great that you've kind of leaned in. So this fitness journey that you've been on, where did this come from?
I was hitting a really deep depression after losing my job last year. And all the jobs that I would get after that just like deepened it, worsened it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take the savings that I have now. I'm going to like take a month and just try to like recenter myself and find a new job that will let me be able to make money and be able to pursue what I want. In that time, I started going to the gym more often, and I made a promise to myself. I was like, listen, I'm going to get myself out of this funk. And in order to do that, I know the kind of person I am. I know that in order to get anything accomplished, I have to like set it in a routine. If I'm going to be working on a project, that has to be like an everyday thing or like a close to everyday thing in order for me to stick to it. And then by that point, it's just like second nature. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week, 6 days a week. And like, doesn't even matter if I'm not trying to like power lift or anything. I just want to get active. I want to get in there and do stuff. And then eventually I just like started enjoying it, and I've been going there like 6 days a week for a little over a year now. And now I've got like titties that can bounce and shit. And it's great. Like I never thought that I could fit into a B cup so easily.
Oh, that's fantastic. No, I've been seeing your pictures, and I think that's really amazing, the journey that you've been on. That's really cool. And I think that anybody should, any kind of journey that they're on with fitness should be celebrated if that's something that they would like to do.
Absolutely.
I really do.
And I love that you bring that up, celebrating it, because like that to me was like the biggest hurdle to get over, is like changing my mindset around working out. Like I had always looked at it as like sort of a like growing up, and I think that we can all relate to this, like this sort of like skinny hegemony that we have, that like, oh, you're not this archetype of a skinny person. Therefore you need to go to the gym. You need to fix that. That will deflate any motivation for me to work out, because I hate thinking of myself in like terms of like being wrong, like being like a wrong body, you know, because like that's just, all bodies are beautiful, and maybe it's not what we want of our bodies, but that does not mean that we have to talk down about our bodies. So like the way that I look at going to the gym, I don't try to push myself to the point that I'm like hurting myself, but rather I look at it as like, look at what my body is capable of. My body can do this. My body can run this long. My body can lift this much weight. And it turns from me fixing something wrong about my body into me celebrating what my body can do. And it makes me more excited to go to the gym, because I'm just like, ooh, I could do that yesterday. I wonder if I can do that or more today. And it motivates me to improve better. And it reinforces a positive inward look on myself and my body.
That's awesome. I miss going to the gym. And I'll say it this way. About a decade ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I had lost about 100 pounds through about diet and exercise, no other means, just diet and exercise. And I was at the gym 4 days a week, I believe. And I think one of the biggest things people always say, they're like, you can always find time. And my thing is, I can find time if I wanted to, but I don't, because of one specific factor. So I have a full-time career, and I pretty much perform and drag full-time as well. Any available moment that I get outside of that, I try to reserve for my friends and my husband. And then the 1% of time outside of that, I try to have for myself.
Right.
To where I can like maybe learn a new language or read a book or do these other things. And the thing is, I had been thinking about maybe taking my 1% of time to get back into the gym. And not because I want to lose weight, but I want to live a long and healthy life, because my life right now is really great.
Yeah.
I love my career. I love drag. I love my husband. I love where I live, and I love my life. And so I want to have a longer life and get to enjoy these moments even more with the people around me that I care about. Because it's true. Like the second I get off work on an off day, like I could absolutely go to the gym for an hour, two or three, or I could even go with my husband if I wanted to. But the reality is, when I get off work, my favorite thing in the world to do is just to hang out with him, like to just maybe play some video games together, watch some TV together, or, you know, like play Pokemon Go, or, you know, go to a nice restaurant, or just to enjoy each other's company as much as I can.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a DJ for drag. And so he's always with me. And people always think that this is really interesting when I talk about this topic. They're like, but you're always together, so why couldn't you, like, so why do you need that other time? And I was like, because quality time is different from this person standing behind me in a DJ booth who I say 4 words to in 3 hours.
Right.
Right. That's not necessarily spending time with my husband. Right. And so I had been really considering, and I love what you were talking about, because I had been considering going back, because the one thing that I do in my free time is I watch TV. And I used to love, one of my favorite things to do when I was in my fitness phase was to like watch TV and like go run a mile on the treadmill or watch a movie on the treadmill while I was just like running and whatever. And I would get that runner's high. I'd get to watch TV, which I love doing, and like having that whole vibe back in me. And I miss that a little bit. I miss having that journey that I was on. And it was something that I did just for me. And I love that.
Yeah. And that's the, and I think that's the biggest thing is like just a couple things I want to touch on what you were saying. Like, first, like, do it for you, absolutely. Like, it only do fitness if it's fulfilling for you. Never do it for anyone but you. That's my that's my biggest advice to anyone listening. And then two, like you were saying, like a difference between quality time and like going to venues with your partner, with your husband, with your significant other, whoever, any drag entertainers listening. Like I've experienced some like very similar circumstances. Like me and my boyfriend are both drag entertainers, and he's been getting a lot of attention coming into the Ohio drag scene, and we've been traveling a lot to do his gigs. But like I agree, like there is a difference between like going to and from gigs with your partner versus like spending that quality time. Cause like if I'm going to Cage's drag shows, chances are he's going to be spending most of the time like in the backstage getting ready or on stage right. doing his number. Like that's, I don't count that as quality time. Cause like, we're not necessarily yeah. together. I'm there to support him. I'm there to like cheer him on and like love him. But like there, you've always got to make time for the people that you love. And I think that's really great that you, that support system that is there for you to have that quality time with.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's true. Cause like, so Adam will get like, every once in a while we'll get booked in like a DJ gig he'll ask me to come to. Mm-hmm. And it's true. I'll help him carry some stuff in, but then I'll just like walk around. And if I don't know anybody, I literally will just like walk around or sit at a table by myself and like be on my phone while he's like, and sometimes I'll dance to get people to dance. Right. Mm-hmm. When he first starts or whatever, but that's not really quality time and in any capacity. Cause people do make that comment a lot that we're always together, but that reality is so different about the things that I like to do. Our quality time will sometimes be in the car on the way to the gig because, mm-hmm. you know, we get to talk and like, you know, talk about each other's days and stuff like that. And on the way home, but never at the gig. Because the one thing I always say about drag artists who are in long-term relationships is that there is this air of needing to appear available. And I don't mean like romantically or sexually per se. What I mean is you need to be available to fans, patrons, and guests.
Absolutely.
Like if you're just like huddled into a booth with a boy or a partner or something like that, then you're not making yourself available to, you know, get people to buy cocktails or buy food, right. or, you know, get people to tip. And you're not like the life of the party if you're huddled up with a partner somewhere at the gig, because that does a disservice to your brand and the venue that potentially booked you.
Yeah, it's a very precarious thing. I don't know if that's the correct word for that, but like it's a pretty precarious situation that like drag entertainers are in, because like it's not like acting where we're where the performance is on stage and that's it. Like we're kind of hired as personalities as opposed to just actors uh-huh. themselves. Like we're there to mingle, we're there to talk to people, get the party moving, and we can't do that if we're not like out among the crowd doing actual work. Like it's a unique situation that drag entertainers are in for that.
Yeah. So switching gears just a little bit, so you've had a lot of viral success on TikTok. You were also one of those freaks of nature who was on it super early after Vine died.
Yeah.
You've seen a lot of success from that. Do you get bookings from your TikTok? And what is it like to have some viral success? Let the listeners know.
It's weird. To the first question, do I get bookings? Like I've gotten a couple of sponsored videos, but nothing really major. And when it comes to like virality, it's weird. It's always the videos that I put the least amount of effort in that go viral. It truly is. Like, I think the most viral video I have on my profile right now, it's at the top of my page. I pinned it. It's me duetting this vegan crunchy mom lady, talking about how, look at me. My body is so perfect because I don't eat any processed foods. Here's what I eat in a day. And I was like, she never eats processed foods. Let's see what it is. First thing that she brings up is pills. I'm like, do those grow in a pill tree? Processed? You don't eat processed foods? How the fuck do you think you got those pills, Mary? Jesus. Like, that video took me 15 seconds to make, and it has 10 million views. Meanwhile, the videos that I, like, script, edit, things like that, maybe, like, 2,000.
One of my favorite TikToks that I saw way back in the day, like 4 years ago, was a person, like, they put a door that, like, said, like, TikTok success. And, like, it was just obviously them wearing different outfits. And, yeah. Like, one was, like, unique original video, and the door doesn't open. And, you know, a unique original dance, the door doesn't open, but the, like, copied dance from a person gets open. Mm-hmm. And then the last one was, like, original sound created for a video gets locked. And then it's somebody walking by saying, somebody using my sound gets led into TikTok viral success. I was telling my friend, you've probably actually seen this one. My friend was the one who came up with the viral sound that it went so viral. The one that says, I'm non-binary, but am I a good boy, or something like that? Like that. And so I told my friend, I was like, you do realize that sound is viral, right? And they're like, what? I was like, go to that video and click on your sound and look at that. And they were like, holy crap. I was like, yeah, that sound went all over TikTok for a very long time.
It's crazy. Like you've made it on TikTok when a sound that you make goes viral. Like, if you like go on TikTok, if you click on the record that like brings you to the sound, if you make like an original video and suddenly you have like 1,000 videos using your audio, like that, mm-hmm. that's currency in TikTok world. Like if you have a currency. Sound go viral, that to me, that comes off as more significant than having just a video go viral, because like the sound will be like reiterated and reformatted and like slapped onto different situations, and then corporations will take hold of it and turn it into cringy memes, and then suddenly some remixer will take that song and put a beat to it, and then corporations will take that beat and make even more cringy memes, and then 10 years go by and people still know you as the guy that made that sound on the internet.
Yeah, I love how you add it, and then corporations will make cringy memes, and it's so true.
It's so like, true. It's the life
that's
cycle
why I like
buying
a box for that though.
Like,
it is. No, it's true. It's true.
It's so true. Because like Gen Z, millennials, and now even Gen Alpha, they're coming up with their own memes. You heard about this? Like fucking middle schoolers coming up with memes. One of them I heard of is called Skibbity Toilet.
What is Skibbity Toilet?
You don't want to look it up because it is pure nightmare fuel. So it's just this like CGI dude's head that looks like straight out of Nintendo 64. Like if you imagine like Ocarina of Time, the way that their heads are all like cube shaped, the CGI man's head sticking out of a toilet, making a scary face at you.
I literally just looked it up because I I'm toxic.
You did what I told you not to do.
I like how you tell me not to do something. You're like, you don't do this. And no, I'm like, I'm going to absolutely
that's
do
what
this.
You're supposed to not do.
God, because here's the thing though, because remember, I'm 37, right? So yeah. I'm a millennial. And a lot of the stuff that Gen Z does, like, because I'm very active on TikTok, like, so, and I follow people who talk about the trends on TikTok at the moment.
Yeah.
So, like, I get to stay up to date on, like, kind of what, like, Gen Z's doing and, like, what's happening there. But what's really interesting is it now, as I age, it doesn't get adopted into my lexicon, like, words or phrases or things that happen. Like, before, of course it did. It would always do because everybody around you would use it.
Yeah.
But because drag artists, what's funny about drag artists is, like, we have a lingo that we also use, like that's like a whole nother language we all have to be fluent in. And so it's like hard to adapt more things.
Yeah.
into the language when we already have so much to describe nonsense, and especially because every season of Drag Race that comes out, somebody on there will say something that's not like a Gen Z term, but they make up something that we have to now adopt and all use.
Right.
Like, you know how we were all like, even like a couple of years, like several years ago, when we all started saying like, fuck my drag or whatever, yeah. Or and I oop or things like that, you know, stuff like that.
Or like
that
Miss wasn't... Vanjie. Miss Vanjie.
Like, yeah, or like, ew, Jesus,
you
gross.
Want, you want, you know, like, that language like that. Evolves? Just watch Drag Race and listen to how many middle school white girls will suddenly start quoting it verbatim.
It's so true. Well, that's because drag queens are drag artists are trendsetters in every aspect of the word.
Amen. And
so as we get a little bit more towards the end of this podcast, a couple of things I wanted to know about you, where you're at now. So what do you do for a living now? Are you full-time drag right now?
So I am part-time drag right now. I do two monthly bingo shows here in Ohio. And we just had one yesterday. It was a lot of fun. And I take occasional bookings every now and then. But for my full-time job, I am working as a tailor. So, like, do adjusting people's pants and suits and shirts and all that, sewn on buttons. It's fun. It's a job.
It's a job.
But I'm also, before I moved down here, I was also a tattoo apprentice. So now I'm in the process of looking for a new shop to apprentice at.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I didn't imagine Miss Carly and Adam Clyde doing tattoos.
Yeah.
Tattoos? That's so crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you had an interest.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Me and over quarantine, I was just so fascinated by like tattoo art and thinking like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for quarantine to be over because I'm gonna like fill up my arms with sleeves, and this is the only one that I've gotten since quarantine happened.
Oh wow.
But
yep.
But Geneva Convention, when I was like first learning about like how to get into the tattoo world, like Geneva Convention was so helpful in helping me find my footing to like be able to get the courage to ask people like, hey, are you looking for an apprentice? Because like it feels a little different than asking for like, hey, are you looking for someone to do a job? Because like for my apprenticeship, I had to pay them, which is pretty standard. Mm-hmm. I've been told that like you generally have to pay to be an apprentice for a tattoo artist, because like they are teaching you. You are asking for them to provide labor in order for you to learn a new skill. So, like, you're going to have to pay for it. And I was like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I get that. But, like, with that, it felt so awkward, like, going into tattoo shops and being like, hey, I've never done this before, but I'd like to. Like, mm-hmm. it just felt so awkward and so, cringy almost. And then talking to Geneva,
sure,
just being like, hey, like what is the best way to approach this respectfully, because like I want to make sure I make a good impression, I want to make sure that I'm respecting the space, and she was just like, just be honest, like at, like go in there, bring your sketchbooks, bring any art that you've made, and just ask them like, hey, I'd love to learn to become a tattoo artist. Are you looking to take on any apprentices right now? I have work that I can show you, and if you want to see my work in action, I would love to draw something up for you. And that's mm-hmm. how I ended up finding my first apprenticeship.
Wow, so cool.
And funny thing, like during this time that I was looking for apprenticeships, I ended up applying to a tattoo shop who left me on red. Like, they gave me a full drawing assignment and everything. They left me on red. And a year later, like a couple weeks ago, they messaged me. They're like, hey, are you still, they text me. They're like, hey, are you still looking for a tattoo apprenticeship, or did you give up on that? It's like, I moved, so I'm looking for a new one. Didn't give up. Like, we're going back and forth, and he's giving me like the third degree about like what I know, how I know how to do it, like how my teachers were. I'm like, do you even own a tattoo shop in my county, let alone within driving distance in my county? Do you own a tattoo shop? He's like, no. It's like, then fuck off. Like,
yeah. This, like, why would I? Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like, why? Like, he just kept on like making fun of like me and my mentors, and like this guy, when I tell you, every tattoo artist and every client of his have told me, like, never apprentice at this tattoo shop. Never apprentice with this tattoo shop owner because he is terrible. I have done countless cover-ups for him, blah, 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 blah. And this guy has the audacity to, like, make fun of me and my mentors. I'm like, dude, I have seen my mentors cover up your shitty tattoos dozens of times.
Gosh, I didn't even know you were interested. That's so crazy. But I mean, we have to think about, like, our season was 4 years ago, it 4 years was. And like 4 months ago.
Almost five.
Yeah, almost five. Like, we're all different people since then. Yeah, it's crazy. We are all of us are drastically different people than we were then.
Yeah.
Which is, that's why I'm kind of excited about the show coming up on December 3rd. It's actually going to be the first time that me and Claire and Diana perform in Portland together in the same show.
That to me is wild. Like, y'all live in the same city.
I love how Carly just called us. He's like, that to me is wild. What is wrong with y'all?
Have you ever gone to lunch?
We went to lunch once. There have been times when we've all been at the same show. That has happened maybe four times in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it is all three of us have different friend groups. All three of us also don't really perform in the same spaces per se. But me and Diana have had two shows together, actually, since we've been here. We had a show called Drama Camp that we did together for like 3 or 4 months. That was produced by somebody else. And then when we did our viewing party with Claire, and then me and Diana had another viewing party as well at a different bar.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. Then, of course, I've worked with Claire and Diana separately a dozen times, but the three of us just never really get booked together. And it's just because the way that Portland operates is there's just different scenes. And so it just never happened. And even though I produce a lot of shows, and I will say this actively, booking Claire is hard. It is really hard to book Claire. Claire is not a person who uses the internet very wildly, doesn't respond to text messages. Like, every time I try to book Claire, Claire will... well, it's more so like Claire is one of those people who their performance style is amazing and it's dynamic and it's so cool to look at. And they were booked at one of the most popular shows in town for the longest time as a cast member before that bar closed, or before that show stopped. And, you know, and so it was just hard to work with Claire. And Diana, on the other hand, Diana is always traveling for their boy job. So booking Diana, like, you need time and patience and whatever. But with me, I'm crazy. So, like, when people ask me to do shows, I just normally just say yes because I don't know how to say no. It's like a vocabulary doesn't exist in my brain for drag. And so it just never really worked. And anytime, I remember I tried twice, but Claire couldn't do it both times. I did get Diana. And I think Claire's only performed for me. And actually, come to think of it, I don't think Claire's actually ever performed in one of my shows, even though I've asked, because they just don't get back to me in time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really excited for this. I think it'll be really cool to be able to see all of us together in the same space. I still have my ugly pink shirt.
I still have my pink shirt, too. I don't know if I have the one that I stoned for the show filming, but I definitely have the backup.
The backup shirt. So let's get to my final question that I have for you. If you were in a bar fight, which of your season Camp Wanakiki siblings would you have on your team to help you win the fight, and why?
Oh my gosh. Do I have a limit to how many? because like all, I feel like all of us on that team can fucking brawl. Okay, two. Definitely you, because you are a no nonsense motherfucker. you know how to let loose and have fun, but you'll also tell people like it is and won't take shit. Fair. So you. I really appreciate that, and I know that you'll have my back.
Yes.
Let's see. Let's see. I feel like Diana Fire would just like stare them down. Like I feel like the Scorpio in her would just be like staring them down until they like say "Ooh, woo, step on me, mommy." So maybe that's a good arsenal to have in a fist fight is like step on me, mommy energy, you know.
Diana is just not a person to ever F with.
Yeah,
Diana terrifies me, and I've seen Diana get uppity with people, and it is terrifying. Mm-hmm. So that's a good vote.
Yeah.
Gosh, do you still keep in touch with any other campers from our season?
Occasionally. Like I don't really like message all that often. But like whenever I'm in Austin and we're at the Austin National Drag Festival, I always make a point to like at least hang out with people from the Camp Wanakiki family, at least a little bit. Like I understand that like we all have our different performances to get to, and we're all trying to like mingle and meet with everyone. But like I try to make it at least a point to like hang out with the people that like I ended up spending a week in the woods with.
Yeah, no, I actually recently purchased some hair from Ivana. Actually, it's really good. It was really good. It was really good hair. I do talk to Tora, not regularly, I would say, but like we really bonded over the last drag festival, and so we've kept in touch a little bit better.
That's great.
Diana, it's funny. Diana and I text maybe once a month. She lives literally 5 minutes from my house.
Oh, no kidding.
It's so bad. Me and Diana's running joke is we only hang out when we're out of town. Like, no time has passed. When me and Diana leave town, we're together almost the entire time. I don't know what it is. So it's the vacation tell me where they can find you on socials.
Where can people find me on socials? Let's see. You can find me on Instagram at UninemClite. That's UninemClite. Same for Twitter. Same for Blue Sky. You can find me on TikTok at PSherman42Wallaby. You can also find me on Farmers Only. I had to create my own username, and that was Plow My Manure. That, unfortunately, is not a joke. You have to make up a unique username, and farmers are not creative, apparently. Also, don't go on Gay Farmers Only. It is just trucks. It is just pictures of trucks.
I have so much to unpack with that. So, yes, everybody, please follow Carly online. Please come out to the show December 3rd. You can find your tickets at www.thecdsdrag.com/moment. We have VIP options available, and of course, meet and greet to see Riley and to see Carly. And it will include the three Portland Camp Wanakiki contestants on there as well. It's going to be our reunion special, which we're super excited about.
Yes.
Thank you all so much for listening to this podcast today. It's been wonderful.
Real quick. I know that I commented this on the picture of me flexing that you shared. If anyone coming to the Portland show wants to squeeze my biceps, I'll let you if you can show me in the DMs that you bought your ticket already.
Woo!
Just send me a DM and I'll be like, okay, you can touch it.
Oh God, I've had so many of my friends after I shared that photo who wrote me and they're like, got all thirsty, and I was like, well, buy a ticket to the damn show. I don't know what to tell you.
Buy a ticket. Listen. Oh yeah, we're not filming this, but like I'm flexing for the camera right now. You can touch it if you send me a DM. Big.
Your arms are so big. Maybe I'll just put a picture of you flexing up there instead of a picture of you in drag. But yes, we all call all of Carly's socials on a gemofasecretpodcast.com. Say bye to the kids, Carly.
Bye, kids. Go to bed.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.